fast fashion comes with hidden costs, costs that most people never think about. It's not just what a shirt costs at checkout, but the toll that it takes on people and the planet.
It was so eye-opening, the other side of what the industry looks like, and it made me think a lot about my purchases.
Angela O'Brien, founder of the sustainable clothing brand Cleobella, has spent years building partnerships with artisans around the world and designing with organic fibers and natural dyes. She shows us that conscious consumerism isn't about being perfect. It's about making better choices one purchase at a time.
Less is more. Look at the label, see the story, get connected to the brand that you're purchasing.
Let's dig in. Angela, thank you so much for being here. I've been wearing your clothes for years now and loving your brand so much. So it's really fun to finally meet you and get the chance to talk to you in person.
You're the same, Bethany. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Should we try our smoothies?
Let's try.
We're just talking about them. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Have you had liver before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But not in a smoothie.
You've traveled so much. You've probably eaten a lot of really unique, interesting foods.
I'm always open to try things.
Yeah.
At least once.
I love that. I feel like this was a good batch. I made it this morning, and all of my kids were like, we want more, because I poured a little bit for
is
each of them.
Is there mint in it, too?
There is, yeah. So it's raw milk,
okay.
Raw liver, mint leaves, and organic berries, and honey.
Oh, yum.
Primal Pastures honey.
Yum.
Mm.
So all good. Right.
This will give us a...
It's not what I expected.
Did you expect it to be terrible?
Well, you know, to have maybe a liver flavor.
Yeah.
None of that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the mint really, really hides that liver flavor.
Delicious.
Okay. So you and your husband traveled the world and ultimately built Cleobella from scratch. What led you to making that decision, and what did that season of life look like for you guys?
No, I think that because it was almost 20 years ago and we were newly married, and we always had this dream of building a life that was rooted in travel and freedom and creativity and community. And my husband was a sales rep in the surf industry. And I was working as a model. I would say I wasn't a very good model. I didn't like it. And I was going to night school and working in fashion, and we decided to just take a risk, leave our jobs, and we bought a ticket around the world. At the time, there was a company called Airtrex that you could buy a one-way ticket and just keep going. And depending on where you were traveling to, you could extend the stay and then just keep the journey going.
Fun.
So, yeah.
Are they still around?
I would love to think that they still are. We'll have to look into
that. Very cool. What a fun thing to do as a newly married couple.
It was the best. And we really, so my husband, Jim, he's a surfer, and that's what he loves to do the most. And when we found ourselves in Bali, Indonesia, we were both in harmony, and Jim was surfing every day. I'm not the type to lay on the beach all day. I was meeting people, and I was connecting with artisans who I had this idea, if I could start a brand and we could make enough money that we could just keep coming back. And that's what we did. So that was in 2006. And in fact, our driver was the one that connected me with Yanti, who was one of our first manufacturers, and we still work with her today. And it's so fun because her kids are now grown and getting married, and they were, you know, 5 and 3 when we first met. And
wow, a lot of history.
A lot of history. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So we spent the last nearly 20 years living mostly half of the year in Southeast Asia and homeschooling our kids and just having fun, I would say.
Yeah. And you guys scaled the company on your own.
Right.
Just like we did at Primally Pure. Yes. Are you glad that you made the decision to grow the company without outside investors?
Absolutely. I mean, freedom is our currency. We've always loved to do things our way and not have an investor that we're raising or, you know, asking permission to do things. Cleobella was built at farmers markets, so we had $12,000 in our savings, and I designed a few leather hand-tooled clutches and some ECOT simple dresses, and when we were in India, I imported these wrap skirts that were made from recycled saris, and that's what we did, and And after our trip, we decided that we couldn't go back to LA, so we moved to Hawaii for a year. Mm-hmm. And I was selling Cleobella designs at farmers markets with a 4-post pop-up tent. I'd load up my minivan and my folding table, and I had clothespins to display all of my designs, and I fanned out all my leather clutches. And I loved that. I loved the community of farmers markets. I loved that I could work on the weekends, build my website during the week, and also sell my designs to local shops. So it started really grassroots. It was like brick by brick, you know?
Yeah.
With no real business plan, just more of a dream of building a creative community and travel.
Was there a moment where you thought, like, okay, this could turn into something much bigger than like a farmer's market brand?
Yes, there's been so many moments. I think it's when, well, the economy got tough in 2007, and that's when we decided to move back to California. But right before we came back to California, we went back to Bali to really build Cleobella as a collection. And I should say my mom's name is Cleobelle. It's my great-grandmother's name as well. So I feel always this guiding force of strong women in my life. And we were back in Bali, and I thought, well, how do I really legitimize this as a brand? And knowing what I knew as a fashion model, I knew that I didn't want to be the brand, but how could I make the brand? And just by experiencing other people doing it, I created the line plan. I did a photo shoot in Bali. I sketched my collection and sold it at LA Fashion Week in 2008. Mm. And that's when I knew that we had something, because Fred Siegel and Planet Blue wrote Cleobella. And it was so exciting because they were stores that I dreamed of and I shopped at and I admired for years. And so to be in stores like that was absolutely incredible. And I thought, well, maybe we have something.
While you were modeling, did you pick up on things that you knew that you did and didn't want to implement in your own brand?
Oh, absolutely. I think now we hire the most incredible models, and I think it's so important for the models who show up at our company who feel seen and feel confident and celebrated. And
was that your experience diversity. As a model?
No. No.
What was it like?
Well, you know, I never fit the model mold. I was an athlete. I love sports. When I was 18, I was my freshman year in college, and I got a modeling contract to go live in Japan for 6 months. And that was where I really decided that I loved travel, but that I didn't love modeling. Mm. It was definitely, you're constantly criticized, rejection. It's just part of the job. And some people are built for it. I am incredibly sensitive. I feel things so deeply. But I really believe in this idea of expansion and that, you know, you're around environments that that you can see beyond of where you're at. And I think it helped me envision the kind of creative life I wanted to build for myself as a brand.
Yeah. As a mom and as an entrepreneur now, how have you balanced motherhood with leading a brand?
Oh my gosh. I don't know if there's such a thing as balance. I like to say harmony. I try to find harmony in what we do. I just love being a mom. It's my priority. My mom is an incredible mother. So I witnessed the importance of celebrating your children's gifts. And when I started Cleobella, I thought this is great because I can have the freedom to have a flexible schedule and be a mom. That's not always the case because there's different sacrifices that you make. But our business is a family business, and our children have been along for the ride since the beginning. When my son was 5, he was in the factories with me in Bali designing superhero costumes out of scraps of fabric and, you know, crystal and gems he would find on the beach. And so I feel like they are such creative beings, and they've seen the hard work that my husband and I have put into growing this brand, and they feel very much a part of it. And they're creating their own individual style, and they love travel. And so it's, you know, we have a freshman in high school now, and our daughter's in 5th grade, and we're really seeing this real spiritual life of travel and the connection to other cultures. You're seeing, they don't remember all the trips they took when they were babies, 2 months old, flying around the world, but it's part of their soul, and you can feel it in them.
So neat. And your daughter is probably old enough now to start wearing some of your pieces. Yes. I don't know if she's fitting into the clothes yet, but for sure, like some of the accessories, right?
Oh my gosh, my daughter is my muse. Her name is Indigo Sky, and she has such exquisite taste. I asked her, what do you think about this? And she's always spot on. So she takes our extra small blouses and she makes them into dresses. She's all about layering. She comes with us to New York Fashion Week. She, whenever we're vintage shopping, she loves vintage shopping because she collects miniature things for her dollhouse. And it kind of has got her into this cultivation of buying things that are used. And so she expresses herself through vintage because it's one of a kind that, you know, her other friends don't have. And she loves that that's becoming part of her identity of creating, you know, this visual expression of herself through her fashion.
That's so neat. Yeah. I bet that's so fun to have that camaraderie with her and just to be able to bring her into what you do in that way.
Oh, I feel so lucky. And you never know. I mean, our son, who just this year, he's really getting into style and fashion, and he's actually vintage shopping with me as well. And it's nice because, you know, I'll do whatever my kids want to do, but it's nice when we can really do something together. So whether we're exploring somewhere new when we're traveling, whether it's a market and some kind of discovery, yeah, I mean, it's so fun being a mom, you know.
Yep, it's the best.
It's the best.
And I know you've also had your own health journey in the midst of growing a brand. What has that looked like, and how have you prioritized your own well-being throughout this whole process?
Oh, my gosh. So my health journey, I think, started as a little girl. I grew up in a household that one of my parents was an addict. So there was a lot of underlying energy that I wasn't necessarily aware of. And my brother had, he was addicted for years and he passed away. So I lived in this world of an energy that I didn't understand, I would say. And I, being the oldest child, I probably just felt it a lot more deeply, being so sensitive. And what I've learned over the years through different autoimmune issues is creating boundaries and trying to let go of that perfectionism and choosing myself when it doesn't always seem as comfortable. We, as a family, we love shopping at the farmers markets and getting our food from local farmers. We're really, you know, I'm very sensitive to what I put on my body. I've worked with a naturopath for years that's helped me out of my autoimmune funks. I do ozone therapy every year. I have a sauna in my backyard to detox. We have a cold plunge that I don't go into as often, but my husband loves it. And so, you know, we have our own little sanctuary that we built at home. And I'm just curious about learning. And the past 10 years, I have been very healthy because I prioritize myself. But at 16, I got mono. And then it turned into fibromyalgia. They thought I had lupus. I went through all these different health journeys. And I found my naturopath in Bali that I've been working with now since 2010. And I did a lot of blood work and a lot of ozone therapy and changed my diet. And I'm healthier than I ever have been. And I operate at a really, I go, go, go. And I think with the practice that I've created through mindfulness meditation, and I've been practicing Kundalini now for 10 years, and I feel like that's really helped the breath work calm my nervous system. So I found tools that have really worked and have healed my body. And I tell everyone who's going through a health journey, our body wants to heal itself and the body will heal itself. And I've seen that because I was at a place after I had my son, who's now 15, I was so sick and debilitated, I couldn't get out of bed for months. Because I was still trying to do all the things I did before having a child and balancing it all, and my body wouldn't cooperate with me. So
what did you do at that point? Because it sounds like you already had kind of some healing tools under your belt, but maybe you were kind of letting that slide, like that taking care of yourself during that time. I don't know. Yes. Is that accurate? And then you just kind of dug back into what you knew worked, or did you figure out like new things that worked better during that season of life?
Well, sleep was so important, and I'm so into sleep health, too. Every night I have my mouth tape and my eye mask, and I sleep in a very dark room, and I love sleep.
Oh, my gosh. Sleep I was just like... thinking, I need to do a video about all the things that I put on just to sleep. It's ridiculous, though. People would think I'm crazy. It's like I do a nose strip now to open up my nostrils, and I'm addicted to those because you get 30% more oxygen, and I feel it. Like, I feel so much better in the morning. So I'm, like, taping my nose. I'm taping my mouth. I have earplugs in.
Yeah.
I have an eye mask.
Yeah.
I have, like, before bed is the red light glasses.
Yeah.
And then I'm putting, like, our magnesium sleep spray on my feet. It's ridiculous.
I love sleep. And sleep is medicine.
It is worth prioritizing.
It is. And at that point, what we had to do, unfortunately, when I was so sick and our son was a baby, I had to sleep in a different room from him. And so my husband slept with our son. We've always done co-sleeping because we've always been traveling and living in different time zones. And so I spent a solid 2 months sleeping, working with an acupuncturist, and then changing up my diet. And that was hard for me because I love to have fun. I love to be in the moment, but I couldn't do the things that I did before. And then my body healed. And ozone therapy has been a game changer.
What form of ozone?
I do it with the IV.
Okay.
Yeah. And I...
That's the only one I haven't done. We have an ozone generator at our house.
You do.
And so I use the gas for different things.
Yes.
I'll do rectal ozone insufflations I'll do it in the ear canal. I'll make ozonated water for like my husband, myself, my kids. But I have not done IV ozone yet.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. And I mean, it has worked for me. And I tell everyone who's going through autoimmune issues. So, and I keep a practice every single year. I've been doing it for now 10 years.
We did an episode with Micah Lowe, who's the founder of Simply O3. So if anyone's curious about
Simply
ozone.
Simply O3,
If anyone's curious about ozone, it's a good episode to reference because he's just such a good source on all things ozone therapy. And it's not something that most people are well-versed in or know a lot about because it's not a traditional... therapy, but it is extremely effective for so many things.
It is. I love the idea of doing it yourself at home too.
Yeah.
Cause I leave that for whenever I'm in Bali, that's where I do it. And, and now we're traveling to Bali once a year rather than twice for extended time. So I always fit in, 3 weeks of ozone.
It's a little bit confusing at first, but Simply O3, they sell these kits and they make it like as easy as possible. It's just getting it situated with the oxygen tank and like figuring all that out. That's a little like funky, like, how do I do this? But once you get it sorted out, and their team's great, like super helpful. Okay. Once you get it sorted out, it's like, it's awesome. It's awesome to have at home. And it's like a one-time investment, you know,
that's worth it.
That you can use forever. We used it a lot when we were detoxing from mold, toxic mold exposure in our homes.
Yes, I hear that's such a thing.
I want to talk about mindful shopping a little bit because we're getting close to the holiday season. And I know that's a big shopping time for so many people. How do you practice shopping mindfully, especially in the holidays?
Well, seeing and living in Southeast Asia, where I've seen the whole process from concept to how it is produced in our supply chain to the end consumer, it's about reading labels and seeing where a product is made and understanding the story. You can pick up the label of any one of our dresses or blouses, and you can see that 89% of our fibers are made with plant-based fibers. We use all natural water-based dyes, and it's really important that the skin health and what you put on your body, these small decisions that you make every day, it helps the farmers and the people that are part of the process of making the product. And it's also part of skin health. So it's better for Mother Earth, as we talk about, and it's also better for ourselves. So small things like that, I would say buy less during the holidays. How do we do that as consumers? Buy quality and buy less. And something we do as a family during the holidays is we do this white elephant game where everyone re-gifts things. And it's just this fun memory. And it's not about the present. It's about the experience as a family. And we've done that for years and the kids love it. This year, our kids decided that they don't want to do gifts. They want to go on a trip. So we're going to go to Tokyo this year, right after Christmas. So yeah, mindful shopping, the more you know better, you do better, right? And the idea of we have the power as consumers to buy the change we want to see in the world, and it can be very small. nobody is doing it perfect, but I think these like small little acts of thinking locally, how can you shop from your local neighbors who have stores? How can you shop from founders like you who've created this brand and understanding the story behind it? I think there is conveniences out there, and there's certain things that we need to buy a part of our everyday life, but being around beauty and being a consumer that appreciates the whole story and the process, I can't help but see it because I've, you know, seen it for so many years with our makers and the sustainable income that's created by, you know, small batch production and product that is sustainably made.
You mentioned looking at the tags to see where something has been made. Is there a place that you would recommend, like if someone looks at a tag and sees made in Bangladesh, would you recommend avoiding purchasing that product?
I would avoid Bangladesh, but I don't want to say all. I mean, you can look at a tag and it says made in Italy and it's not made in a good place. Okay. You can look at a tag that's made in China and it's made in a good factory that has all the different credentials. Cleobella's product is mostly made in India and Indonesia and Sri Lanka, and we have personally visited every factory that we work with. They're small home industry factories of husband and wife teams like my husband and I, or they're women-owned factories that they're their dream to have their own factory. So I think labels, having product that is plant-based is important because we know it goes back into the soil. Buying product that's well-made so it can have a long life. Buying secondhand is really important. I mean, I love treasure hunting and vintage shopping. And I think, you know, celebrating a designer that, you know, that you find that was maybe produced from the 70s or the 90s and you think, gosh, this was made really well, and giving it a second life. It's just educating yourself and understanding the back end. There's just this invisible part of producing product that not everyone is aware of. And the more you know, the more we can be a part of this like collective community that we're all experiencing here on the planet.
Have you seen The True Cost of Fashion?
Yes.
I'm sure you have. That was eye opening.
It was a game changer. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's seeing seeing the people that are making all of these fast fashion garments and the conditions that they're working under, which are super unsafe oftentimes and just really like sad and heartbreaking overall. It really makes you rethink your purchases.
I love that there's more education. Because we don't always know. We're busy in our own lives that you're, you know, there's this, you know, excitement of buying something new all the time. But I think celebrating different heritage techniques, like, you know, we use a lot of block printing, which is such a beautiful process. That it continues cultural, you know, I guess, crafts and helps provide jobs. That's a big part of it. Part of Cleobella's sustainable journey has been around people and creating sustainable income for people and partners that we've worked with for years. I think True Cost, when I watched that documentary, it was so eye-opening, the other side of what the industry looks like, and it made me think a lot about, you know, my purchases. And there's the Sheins and the Temus of the world and these big companies that...
Shein is insane. I got stuck on their website one time and I actually bought like 10 things.
And you didn't realize?
And no, I did. I realized it. But then I was like, what did I just do? This is, I feel like I just sold my soul. And I went back and I canceled my purchase.
That's for you. Good for you.
And I canceled my account because I'm like, I don't want them to have any of my information.
It's tempting, and that's the human experience, right?
It really suck you in. The website itself is like just an explosion for the nervous system. Okay. It is, I don't know if you've been on there, but it's nuts. It's wacky.
No, I try to stay away from it.
Yeah.
I try to shop for my friends that are designers. I try to wear vintage. Anything I'm inspired by, I try to create myself. So I think in terms of getting dressed and, you know, what I like to purchase for myself is not fast fashion. It's more timeless. And I think about it. Can maybe one day I pass this down to my daughter, Indigo? Will she want to give it a second life? I love going through my mom or my grandma's closet and seeing all the things that they've had for years and the stories behind it. I really love the story. The story to me is everything.
Yeah, I need to get better about doing that, just like saving my favorite things to pass down.
Yes.
Because I think that's so, so special. And what I love about well-made clothing is that it does last versus like I remember in college, I shopped at Forever 21 a lot, like my friends and I, and we would joke that it was like disposable clothing, like one-time thing, and then it would like, you know, fall apart, kind of.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and at that age, it's hard. You want to be, you want to be a part of the trend. I remember that too. My mom always loved to sew, and she loved vintage. She was a child of the 70s, and she lived on a commune at one point. So she would say, Ange, we can make that. How can we make that together? And I always felt like I had a different point of view because I had one-of-a-kind pieces. I mixed it up with those pieces because you're exploring your own fashion expression. But now that I know so much, it's the conscience, you know? And it's also, I feel the energies of the fibers. If I'm wearing a synthetic fibered piece, it feels different.
Yeah.
And the more you're aware of it and energy,
there's really testing on that. The frequencies.
It is. Of linen is the best. Mm-hmm. This is linen today.
So yeah, let's talk about that a little more. Just synthetic fibers versus natural fibers. What's the difference there, and why are natural fibers superior?
Well, natural fibers will decompose and go back into the earth, right? So you can actually envision it kind of like a produce, or where we're at in the land today, is it can really go back into the earth and not live in landfills like synthetic fibers.
Like, which there's so much clothing made of synthetic fibers just sitting in landfills right now.
Yes.
It's like a huge problem.
And there's a recycling process so we use synthetic fibers in our swim because we need the elastic stretch.
Yeah. How can you not? You can't really avoid it, right?
They are creating new. This is the exciting part. Even 10 years ago when we were traveling through India and part of Indonesia, there was not the ability for designers to have these GOTS-certified organic fibers or these new fibers that are made from like pineapple or rose or eucalyptus. There is so much newness out there that's available to designers. And
there's fabric made of rose?
Yes.
And it
feels
pineapple?
Like silk. It's so beautiful. Gosh. It's exquisite. It is so beautiful.
Are you working with any of those fabrics?
We are. We're testing it, and we want to do more storytelling around it. The hard part is that it is more expensive.
Yeah.
So I really, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So for me, having our brand be at a sustainable price point, I try to have all of our pieces be under $300. That's really important to me. But as the cost of things have gone up, I feel like there's stories to be told in really small batch that could potentially grow. Mm-hmm. I just spent a week in New York for Climate Week, and it was so exciting. All these business owners that are working to give designers and companies more opportunity to use sustainable materials. And I felt hopeful about where things are going. But that's the difference between, I feel like even years ago, a lot of my friends didn't even understand organic and the meaning of organic and not having pesticides and all that. And now we can have that in the clothing that we wear too, because the consumer is asking for it. So it's more readily available to the maker. And that's the change that you can see. And it feels really exciting.
Yeah. And synthetic fibers, not only are they tough on the environment, but they're also not as good for the person wearing it, because these are essentially plastics
that
people are wearing, right? And, you know, they're petroleum byproducts. And so
hormone disruptors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what we put on our skin gets absorbed into our body. So clothing is just another way to be mindful of our toxic exposures. And you mentioned hormone disruptors. I'm thinking of like the fertility crisis that we're in right now.
Yes.
And how these hormone-disrupting chemicals are mimicking estrogen in the body, leading to estrogen dominance, which can negatively impact fertility. So,
especially your undergarments.
Yes.
It's really important. I think about all these kids that are in sports uniforms, so they're all made out of synthetic fibers, us wearing our yoga, where there's not many brands. It's hard. It's hard for the consumer because there's not many choices. But
with workout clothes, it's swim, because, you know, having that stretch is helpful. But I've seen brands that are maybe using a little bit of synthetic, but like mostly cotton.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it's about just like finding the best options that you can and doing the best you can, but also taking it seriously because it matters.
And it's like connection to the good for the planet. It's good for the maker, and it's good for yourself too, right? And when all of those are in harmony, I think that's when big change can happen.
Mm-hmm. What are some certifications that people can be out on the lookout for when shopping?
B Corp certification. That was a journey. It took us almost 3 years to go through the process, and it really helped clean up our supply chain and put a lot of infrastructure within our company. There's so many incredible companies out there that are B Corp certified. And we're part of the B-Lab community, and I feel like it's an awake community. And I don't know why every business owner isn't taking that journey, because every 3 years, there's new markers that helps you become better. All of our factories are SEDEX certified. And
what does that mean?
SEDEX is a process where it's everything from, you know, the lighting, the conditions, every part of the buttons that are sourced, they're all done in a way that's really transparent. So there's a trail leading back to everything. So that's what we've done with Cleobella. Is
that
we work
pretty
with
rare
suppliers
in the fashion industry? There,
it's more expensive. Yeah. Ultimately, it costs more money. So there are choices that you make. I mean, even from the hang tacks that we use on our garments, the woven labels, it's organic fibers. Our hang tags are used from recycled materials. We, you know, all these small decisions that you make, it costs more, but it's better ultimately for the planet. And the design process, 70% of the design process that's considered sustainable is made at the design level. So if there's a beautiful sparkly bead I want to bring into our holiday collection, and most likely it's made from a synthetic fiber. So how do you use recycled materials, recycled brass, like we do on some of our Bali bracelets that we sell, and be a part of the conversation of fashion, but do it in a way that's less harmful to the planet?
What about the Okotex? Is that how you say it?
All of ours are Okotex. All of our swim is.
I see that on a lot of things. Like, yeah. Is there a scale to that? Or is it just Okotex or not Okotex certified? I've seen like numbers next to it, I think.
Okotex certified is all of our swim. So that's the recycled material that's used. So then that differentiates between, because all of these, you know, we're working, I always say, so many hands and hearts that make every garment. So it's the mills and the supply chain that have to have their certifications so that you have credibility, right? We don't own all of our factories, but we have to make sure there's a trail and our production manager follows that all the way through. So Okotex is one for recycled material in all of our swim.
And so that wouldn't be one that you would see on natural fibers.
We don't, no. Yeah. GOT certification is what you see on natural fibers. And that's when, you know, every year we're in India, we go visit the farmers that we buy our cotton from. And we work with farmers that are GOT certified. And then we're meeting the farmers that are saying, this is the farm we want to work on because there's no pesticides here. And in between the crop cycle, they're planting potatoes and they're planting onions. And they're, you know, it's that regenerative conversation that, you know, working on a farm and knowing what that cycle is for the people that are doing all the hard labor.
Biodiversity in the soil by rotating the crops like that. And yeah, like you mentioned, I'm sure the farmers are just ecstatic to be working on an organic farm, because the people that are working on farms that use pesticides are suffering majorly.
Oh, so toxic. Yeah. I know. The last time we went to visit some of the farms that we work with, there was this woman who owned one of the farms that we went to visit, and her son and her were there, and they were connected to one of the larger mills that buys from them. And this mill was beautiful. It had solar paneling, and it was a beautiful man that took us through his mill that we had lunch with him. And she talked about the just the whole process from start to finish, and how this work is feeding her family. She's educated, her children are educated, and the farm is her livelihood. And she's been doing it generationally. And we had a coconut together, and she explained the process to us. And I'm just mesmerized. I just wish everyone can experience the way product is made and to see the whole life cycle. I think it would really help us make different choices with shopping. You know, we work with a lot of hand crochet, and we've been doing it for years in both Bali and India.
I have one of your crochet dresses. The red one. It's the only red dress that I own. Literally, I had my colors done, and I found out that there is a shade of red that I can wear, which I never thought that was a thing for me. And it's like the shade that you guys made, the one with the collar.
I love the short little man with the collar. Yeah. So that is made by, there's two factories we work with. So one is in Bali, and it's run by a woman named Appy. I call her Happy because she's happy all the time. And she has about 15 women that work with her, and they do it home industry at home, handmade. A dress like that would probably take, I don't know, maybe 5 days to make.
Wow.
It is so labor intensive. And then we do a lot of piece work in India with our crochet. And a lot of the crochet is done women at home. So women that want to contribute to their family income, and they're at home with their kids crocheting little panels, and we're inserting them in with the factories and some of our pieces with our poplin tops or poplin dresses. So that part is so neat to see the whole experience and for them to, you know, be able to contribute to the family as we want to, mm-hmm. too, as women contributing to our family and showing our children that we are, you know, working and thriving and all of it. So, yeah, you just can't help but feel connected to, you know, like the human experience of connecting to people and seeing the sameness that we all are when you're traveling and you're meeting artisans and they're sharing different techniques. Even this dress that I make, I mean, this is done partly by machine, but it's individual thread, and it's, you know, part of it's hand done, part of it is cut with little scissors one wow. by one. Oh, and a lot goodness. Of times the women are doing it outside in the sunshine, and they're all around chatting and talking and telling story. I feel like I don't know how else you tell the story of the people behind it, because they're the true artists. They're really what bringing our designs to life.
And such a stark contrast from, I'm just thinking of The True Cost of Fashion again, yes. and just some of the footage from that movie of the workers in the factories mm-hmm. who, you know, you mentioned the woman who's making dresses from home, and she's doing it, like, you know, in her own home environment. And I'm thinking of these women in the factories that they show in the movie who are like, have no choice but to bring their children with them.
Right.
And then the children are just like miserable, sleeping, you know, in this factory at night and being exposed to all of these toxic chemicals that they're using in the factories. So yeah, that contrast is just wild. And I like what you said earlier about just buying less. And
yes.
so I think that's a good shift for people. Like, rather than buying more cheaper things, prioritizing less, purchasing like less really quality made items that will stand the test of time that we can feel better about wearing. You've talked about, I think, something called circular fashion.
Yes.
Can you explain what that means?
Well, it's the whole life cycle of product. And we recently onboarded a company called Treat, where you can actually resell your Cleobella dresses. And that's launching this holiday. So it's this idea of, you know, obviously focus on natural fibers because it'll go back into the earth, but also how do you resell your product? I love shopping resale, whether it's from The RealReal or Poshmark. I love a lot of women are gathering and like doing swaps of product. We've done that with Cleobella before too, and just giving it a second life. That's the circularity conversation.
Cool.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think about this, but I used to do one of the clothing rental websites while I did it, I think, in pregnancy and like postpartum phases when my body was changing.
Yeah.
It wasn't Rent the Runway.
Okay. Fashion Pass is a good one.
Yeah, I used Fashion Pass at one point, and Newly. Mm-hmm. I used both of those during that time. I felt like the clothing, they would dry clean it in between each use, and then it would smell so strong.
Oh, that's a tricky thing.
And I would like have to air it out outside.
Oh.
And that kind of did the trick. Like, I would just put it outside for 24 hours in the sun. And so I feel like that's a good trick for even buying things secondhand, because the sunshine is really the best disinfectant.
Oh, it is.
And
that's how my grandmother would
do
it forever in Ireland. She would hang everything out and get everything very, very white.
Right.
I think there's also this idea of mending clothes and taking care of clothes that we've lost. It's an art that I know my family did for years, just being in Ireland. You know, how are you taking care of your clothes? You talked about dry cleaning. I recommend washing things by hand. And I also don't think you need to wash everything that much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of spray. There's also different like essential oils that you can spray on your product. But most of the product of Cleobella, I wash in a light cycle and I hang it to dry. I have a little clothesline
outside.
That's what
I do with your clothes. So do any of your clothes require dry cleaning?
Some do. And I think the label will tell you depending on what the product is.
What is that? What makes an article of clothing need to be dry cleaned versus like hand washed?
A lot of times it can depend on the dye process too. Because, you know, when you're using natural dyes, we used to use a lot of indigo dyes, and my daughter's name is Indigo. And so I love the whole creation of the indigo plant turning into a garment. The problem is indigo, it really fades as you wash it. We were having returns. So there's, you know, different parts of washing and care that, will preserve the product longer.
And I always think, wonder that with labels, like, do I really need to dry clean it? Do I really need to listen?
No, you don't. You really don't. But there are certain rules and production and what they're required. The factory really guides us with what that is.
Okay.
I always say, I'm not a scientist. I don't know everything. I feel like I'm learning along the way. And I think that's what I love about being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I like the idea of mending clothing as well. My assistant over here knows this because I have given her, like, there's this one pair of shorts that just, like, keep ripping all the time. And I, like, wear them. I wear them almost every day, to be fair. But, like, I've sent her to the tailor, like, multiple times to, like, repair these little slits
because
I don't know. I just, like, I like them. Why would I buy a new pair? I'll just, like,
that's the best
pay $6 to have a little cut sewn up.
I do that with all my shoes,
I just need to learn to sew myself so I can just do it.
But. I mean, I actually learned to sew when I was younger, but my kids are really good at sewing because of the Waldorf school. Mm. And so we have a sewing machine, and my daughter's a lot more active than my son is, but it's I actually don't have the patience to sew. I'm not good at it. My mind's too busy.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same. I feel like it's a fundamental skill that I should have in my back pocket, but...
Yeah.
Same. It's like, where am I going to find the time to just pick that up?
No, I don't know. It's all the things. We want to do all the things. But I was saying, my shoes are something that I always go to get fixed every season, like my boots that I scuff up, so I can wear them forever. I love buying a vintage thing, restoring it, and having this like one of a kind that I'm accessorizing with my Cleo Bella dress.
I love that. You have mentioned prioritizing these artisan relationships over just, you know, forging ahead and scaling at all costs. How do you keep that commitment as your business has continued to grow?
I think it's just being thoughtful and spending time with them that is a reminder that we have to keep giving them jobs. So how do we do that? Whether it's bringing past pieces into the collection or, you know, making sure that when our merchandiser planner creates the line plan that we're giving enough work to Yanti, enough work to Harry. And it's hard. But I would say we still do a lot of small batch production for Cleo Bella. Some of our dresses, we're only ordering 100 units. And I love that. And that's really important to me. Our printed dresses, there can be more volume there, and we sell to a lot of specialty stores. But I'm not interested in building a business where we're selling thousands and thousands of units and everyone has it. I want things to be unique and special and creative. And for me, I want to be inspired. I want our customer to be inspired when they pick up a garment and know the story behind it. So
do you guys do restocks often? Like if something sells out?
There are certain pieces... We do. I mean, it's a balance between what's paying the bills, if there's something that's really right, or moving on. What we'll do a lot is recolor a print. Mm-hmm. So we sell out of the print the best-selling top, and then we'll bring a new recolor of the print in because everyone loves our prints. They're all hand-drawn in our office. And
you guys did such a cute one that I was so sad I missed. It sold out, I think, really quickly. It was a white skirt and white top, and there were like seashells.
Oh, it was hand embroidered. Yeah.
That one was so cute. Oh, that sold out fast,
that
right?
That sold out fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it when it sells out. I mean, it's so exciting.
Yeah. And this one's gonna go fast going into it, or are you oftentimes like surprised by which ones sell out?
Sometimes I feel like I don't know anything anymore. there's a feeling. There's definitely a feeling. We always say it's Christmas Day when a collection is ready to be launched. So tomorrow, I'm shooting our new summer collection for 2026.
Oh, my goodness.
We're so far in advance.
That is so weird because we're recording this in October.
Right. And this
and you're already planning for summer.
Calendar is.
How do you know, like, what's going to be trending? Do you pay attention to trends? No. Are you just not at all? You're just going off of what you like.
I don't want to be. I love seeing the runway shows. I'm so inspired by that. But we're really inspired by travel. And so whether there's a really unique vintage scarf that we're finding in Morocco or, you know, a painting that we're re-inspired by and making a print on a dress. We're very rooted in heritage techniques and celebrating that. And I don't think following trends is a business that's sustainable. We're inspired by it, I would say, but we're not necessarily following it. We don't get the trend reports. It's a feeling. It's very heart-led. It's very intuitive. And sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we get it wrong. The consumer tells us what she likes. Our business is built on wholesale. We have incredible warriors and sales teams that are out sharing Cleobella's story. We sell to over 600 specialty stores. And so you really see our product in person and you see the quality behind it. And I think it's at an affordable price for the value. And we're building our e-com store, which is, we love. We get instant feedback from our customer there. Our influencer partners will tell us what they really like. And oftentimes they're right. They're the best stylist. You know, I love following and seeing influencer stylists and how they wear our product. And yeah, it's kind of like, I wish we had a crystal ball. We say that in the office all the time. And there can be, you know, a conversation between our merchandiser planner and design and us, like, you know, moving forward and trying new things. And then what we know our customer wants. And it's ease and it's a beautiful, relaxed, you know, maxi printed dress where she can wear barefoot or throw on boots. She can belt it, layer with a jacket, and like it lives with her.
Yeah, your stuff is very versatile.
Thank you.
I love that about it. What legacy do you hope that Cleobella will leave behind, both in fashion and for women's voices?
One of our core pillars is feminine strength, and it's something that I feel like I've learned from my mother and my grandmother. And being a business owner, I believe that you can break the norms of what that looks like as a female founder. And I hope we embody that. I hope we empower women to do whatever their dream is. They can show up wearing a beautiful dress and something that tells a story. I hope my daughter, one day, maybe she'll take over the family business. No pressure.
Does she say she wants to?
It's funny. She'll come into the office because the kids are in the office all the time. And one of my tech designers would call her her future boss.
Cute.
She wants to be an interior designer, but I know she'll definitely do something creative on her own. So
my daughter's already plotting her takeover of Family Pure. Yes.
Yeah, isn't that so wonderful for them to be a part of it and to see themselves in creating something?
Yeah, it's super special. I have this thing, like I'm always kind of evaluating, am I doing a good job in, you know, first and foremost, like in the home as a mom, and then like with the business, and how am I balancing the two? And like you said, it's like balance isn't probably the right word. Like it's impossible to strike a perfect balance all the time. But yeah, how am I harmonizing both of those things? And I think bringing the kids into it as much as possible is what really helps me to feel like, okay, this is worthwhile. This is something that is like bringing value to our household and not, you know, taking value away from it, because there is this excitement that I see in them when I do bring them into it and when they can connect the dots of what I'm doing and what I'm spending time on when I'm away from them with, you know, using the products and sometimes being a part of the process of creating products and whatnot. It makes it really fun. And I also see reflected in them this desire and like can-do attitude of like they feel like they can do anything and accomplish anything. And I don't know, maybe a part of that comes from like seeing their parents doing what they feel called to do in life. So yeah, I think that it's important to just always kind of evaluate that and and be thinking about that. At least it's something that I try to do. And it sounds like, you know, you're doing that with your kids as well.
Yeah, I would say I'm so hard on myself. I'm always like, am I enough? You know, there's like this constant chatter that I'm forever working on. And a lot of it starts with a relationship that I have with my husband, who's also my business partner. And how are the kids witnessing the way that we're communicating with each other? How do we set boundaries that we come home, we're not talking about business? How do we include them in the process? And our kids have been, you know, on photo shoots with us for years. And, you know, my daughter comes in and designs collections with us. And, yeah, seeing that they can create whatever world they want to dream of. And isn't that part of our birthright, right, is to you know, kind of create the life that we desire to. And I feel so grateful and just so in awe of the life that we've built. My 20-year-old self wouldn't even believe that we're still here and making beautiful clothing, being a part of a creative community and learning from other female entrepreneurs like yourself. And I hope our children see and find their passion one day, whatever it looks like.
What does a day in the life look like for you now?
So
I'm sure every day is different, if you could, encapsulate it in one day.
Oh, well, I love driving the kids to school, so that's part of my morning routine. I do share that role with my husband. I work out 3 days a week before I take the kids to school, so early mornings.
How early?
6.
Okay, yeah. Very early. So what time do you wake up for that?
Right before it.
Okay. You're running out the door.
And then Fridays, I work from home, and I have my Kundalini yoga practice with my Long Beach community, and that really grounds me. And then I love picking up fresh flowers and getting, making sure we have groceries for the weekend and doing nothing on a Friday night. And I love having weekends with no plans and kind of being in the rhythm of whatever the kids need. So I'm very present. But Monday through Thursday, I'm pretty on with the brand, and I'm in meetings, and we work in the office, our team, and it's creatively really collaborative, and we're reporting on what's working, and we're innovating, and we're all manifesting together. My commute to work is only 5 minutes. My kids go to school. I get to drive the beach every morning to school, so they're really close by, and it's a juggle, but I do it with my husband, and he's like, we equally have a similar rhythm with helping, making sure the kids get to where they need with all their activities and then balancing work.
How do you infuse little bits of wellness into your day?
Even here, I was doing my little breath work, and on my car ride here, I'm really into breathing and connecting and grounding. I have a little space in my office with my incense, which is a Bali ritual that I've learned for years, where I have my little daily practice. Lighting a candle is a big part of, that ritual. We're a big Irish family, and we drink tea all day long. And I feel like my time with a hot cup of tea really is my quiet time to ground. And it sounds silly, but little simple things.
No, it doesn't. I love beverages.
Yes.
I get a lot of value out of beverages throughout the day.
Yeah, it really, mm-hmm. And it's like a little shift. When I go from one marketing meeting where we're concepting a new photo shoot, and I'll head into, we have a little matcha station in our office. I'll make myself a matcha and head into the design meeting. It's like, okay, let's clean the slate. Let's put new energy into this so that I can be focused. I'm known to always be late to every meetings because it's always like one thing to the next. But I feel like the busyness of what this business brings, that little reset helps be connected and present.
What's your go-to outfit when you're rushing out the door in the morning?
A printed dress. Easy printed dress. They're so comfortable. I mean, I love wearing jeans, but I just think they're so constricting. I would just rather be in a dress all day long. Take a nap in a dress on the weekend.
They are more comfortable.
They really
As
are.
As a kid, I refused to wear jeans because I thought they were so uncomfortable. Yeah. I could not understand why everyone wore jeans. I'm like, what is everyone doing? These aren't comfortable.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, I wear them. I wear jeans.
But
dresses are the most comfortable option.
So I have this scar on my head when I was, I think, 2 years old. My mom said I was in my party dress. I always loved to be in my party dress. My grandma would go down to Mexico and get these tulle quinceañera dresses that they had in every color. And she wanted to take me out of my party dress, put me in my pajamas to drive me home from my cousins. But I did not want to get out of my party dress. And I ran and I split my head in the corner of a wall. And it's always my little connection back to my love of getting dressed up. I was like, this is a little girl.
I love that you see it that way. That's really sweet. What is your favorite material to wear? Cotton, linen?
Linen.
Yeah. I love linen. Do you have linen sheets at home?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I have cotton sheets. Okay. Bala Branch. I love cotton. Yeah. I love to sleep in cotton. But I have a linen outer linen. Yeah.
And what does that mean?
My duvet. My duvet is linen. And my my best friend, who Jess, Days But Amaze is her company, she has a linen company, and she makes the best bedding. And so I always have her bedding on the outside of our bed. Yeah.
What is the most overrated fashion trend right now, in your opinion?
Oh, I feel like always new, just chasing the trend of new. I look at the 90s trend and I think I lived it, so I don't know if I can completely go back to it. I appreciate it. A lot of the young kids are doing it. I think trends come and go. I think it's just a feeling. And I love working with your body on what fits you best and what complements you. And it's a feeling. I say, try not to follow trends.
What is one conscious shopping habit that you wish that everyone would implement this week?
Buy less. Be really thoughtful. Look at the labels. Those are two.
Yeah. You can give more if you want.
Yeah. Less is more. Look at the labels. See the story. Get connected to the brand that you're purchasing. Shop small. But just consume less and enjoy your community, your people, your family. Create memories.
So good. And your brand is so easy to do that with. So I'm so grateful that you were able to come out today.
Thank you.
I love your brand, as I keep saying, but your stuff is just so ultra flattering. And it is the first place that I go to when I have a vacation or an event coming up. And I always get so many compliments when I wear your stuff.
You look so great.
Thank you for what you're doing.
Always. Thank you, Bethany.
Thanks for being here. Where can people find you and where can people find Cleobella?
Cleobella.com and my Instagram, Angie OB.
Awesome. Thanks, Angela.